Welcome to Disillusioned, a podcast where I work out whether I'm still in love with the beautiful game. This podcast is sponsored by Kooka, 100-degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. Joining me on my journey is the producer of my other podcast, Derby fan, Blake Fallow. We'll get on to Blake in a minute, but I need to explain where I'm at, first of all. So, let me explain. This isn't going to be some sort of football bashing podcast. Well, I hope it isn't. It was better off in my day, that sort of thing. Because I don't actually believe that. I believe it's just different. Though, what I want to know is it still for me? I'll let you into a little secret here. I've tried to walk away from football a few times for various reasons, which I'll go into in a minute. But it seems that football is sort of... Well, how do you put it? It's just really hard to get rid of, isn't it? And it keeps dragging me back. So this podcast is a discussion on football, the industry, and whether it's in good hands at the moment, whether it's on the right track or whether it's lost its way a bit. I mean, I think everyone can agree that the way we're running VAR, the offside law and handball are total dog shit. Anyway, we want to discuss what we like and what we're struggling with. My number one complaint is always contact leaving the game, and I'm sure we'll discuss that a lot. And if this podcast continues, we'll probably discuss that every week because it drives me nuts. I believe football is also a good metaphor for what's going on in the world and what we are accepting as humans. So I reckon it's going to take about 2 months for us to sort out the football world and the actual world. So keep joining us on our journey. But Blake and me want to, we can't do it on our own. We want your help. So please write to us and join in so we can gauge what other people think of the beautiful game, so I can discover whether I still love football. So, Blake, let's discuss him. I was basically looking for... Hello, Blake.
Hello, thank you.
I was basically looking for a producer for my podcast, and a friend of ours, who's actually a guest on the show later, Robbie Knox, said, hey, I know this guy called Blake, and he's a good guy, and he might be able to help you with it. And so Blake starts producing my other podcast, and every conversation we have on the phone, we just end up talking about football constantly. And then eventually we thought, well, why don't we do a podcast on this? Because I'm moaning on about certain aspects of the game that I hate now, but also stuff that I love, and it's just so that's where we are. So Blake, tell us a bit about yourself.
Blake Fallows, massive Derby fan for my sins. Obviously not the best time to be a Derby County fan at the minute, rooted bottom of the Championship, but I'm a sports journalist by trade, work at BBC Radio Derby, and obviously got involved with you producing your podcast, and it quickly became evident that we had a lot of shared interests. I think we would speak on the phone about work things, and I think one of the first times we spoke, it became a debate about who was the best player of all time, and it went from can we just edit this clip or do this, into you telling me why you thought the best player in the world, who it was, and I came back with you, and it quickly became evident that we're just both massive football fans. So this is it's a real honour, really, to share the platform with you and try and figure out football a little bit.
By the way, the best player of all time is Zinedine Zidane. I mean, I can discuss it just in a couple of sentences now, but I'm sure we can do more on this in the future. And the reason why is he's good with his left foot, good with his right foot, scores in the box, out the box with the header. And, you know, he headbutts the oppo as well. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that guy's game. He can take players on. He's skillful. He's got a good range of passing. Absolutely incredible player. But we will discuss Maradona later, who's clearly, I mean, he's kind of the best as well, isn't he? And Pele's the best. And Messi's the best.
Anyway, it's a never ending.
So you're a Derby County fan. And one of the conversation I had with you the other day, which I really enjoyed, was I said, where do Leicester City fit in with your hatred of Nottingham Forest and Nottingham Forest's hatred of you? And your answer to that is?
Nowhere. As far as I'm concerned, it's Leicester. They can have Coventry or Northampton or anyone else down the M1. It's Derby and Forest. We hate each other and we both mutually sing, it's Derby and Forest, you're all on your own. They hate us. Leicester, to me, are about fourth, fifth, maybe sixth on the list of clubs that I hate as a Derby County fan.
It's funny with the derbies, isn't it? Because as a Chelsea fan, the people we hate most are Spurs, which, but it's not it's not fair because Spurs hate Arsenal and Arsenal hate Spurs more. That's the real derby. West Ham hates Spurs as well, and Arsenal hates Spurs. Everyone hates Spurs. Poor Spurs fans. But the other derby we've got, which is we've got sort of like a nice little thing going with Liverpool these days because of the amount of matches we played against them. But Leeds has been fantastic derby for years. And when they were down in the Championship, I hated it. Now they're back up. It's great. And what I love about Leeds coming back up is they've come up with a great team. That team can beat Chelsea, and their manager's super cool as well. They've come back looking brilliant, and I love that because it's going to be a proper derby match. And so I'm really excited about it, and those sort of matches are great. The other question I asked you, Blake, was, again, I enjoyed this, the answer to this. Who owns Cloughy? Who owns Brian Clough? Because obviously he did well with Derby and he did really well with Forest as well. So who owns him?
They've got the kind of high ground that he won two European Cups that they go on about to this day. 79 and 80, it's 40 years ago, lads, let it go. But obviously he won more there, but he stayed in Derby. He lived in Derby. He said on record he wished he'd done it with Derby. They've got two European Cups. We've got a quote, and his quote was, "Derby is a footballing city. Nottingham never has been. So we own Brian Clough."
When did he say that?
I don't know. He may not have said it. It might just be a thing that Derby fans have invented because we never won a European Cup. But I think it is on the record that he did say Derby is a footballing city and Nottingham never has been.
I miss Brian Clough so much. Every now and then, like a little clip of him will come along and onto social media, and you just remember how brilliant he was. The thing is, and this is we'll talk about this a lot on the podcast. I believe the contract between the footballers, the football clubs, and the fans. I think the contract's been destroyed. They've ruined. They're not doing their part of the contract. We're going along and watching or watching it on telly, whichever way you're watching it. And they're not doing what they're... But Cloughy always understood it was about the fans. And that's why I loved him so much. And, you know, the modern version of that might be Jurgen Klopp, who really understands that it's about the Liverpool fans. And, you know, Liverpool are really lucky having him as their gaffer at the moment. He understands everything. Apparently, he's gone into that club and he's actually befriended absolutely everyone, from the people who work in the kit room, the people who wash the floors, the canteen. He knows everybody. And that's what great about him. And that's what Cloughy used to be, wasn't it? Someone like that.
Cloughy, to me, and I don't know if this is biased as a Derby fan, and obviously he took Derby from the second division way before my time, but from a struggling second division side to being champions of England twice. So I may be biased in this, but he's got to be the greatest manager that never managed England, greatest English manager that never got the job. And I think he obviously had a little bit too much to say for himself at times, and he became that TV persona, and he was on with Frost and he was on with Park, and he became that TV persona. But he, to me, I think he's the greatest. I really do think he's the greatest. I think that's a real yardstick of management, that you can go to a second division club, you can get them in, and not only get them in and do well to win the first division. The equivalent of that now would be Derby is struggling. Somebody comes in now, Derby need a manager. Not only do we go up this season, we go on to win the Premier League next season. That's incredible.
We'd say it could never happen, but then you've got to look at Leicester, the greatest team in the Midlands. They go... what Leicester City did. Oh, and I say, I keep on saying I want to walk away from football, but then football's the only sport where that could happen, I believe, where Leicester City could come along and do something like that.
This is another yardstick and another way to describe it. If Nottingham Forest would have done what Leicester did, I'd have hated it and I probably wouldn't have left the house for months. When Leicester won the Premier League, I was happy for Leicester. And I think that shows the level of hatred and rivalry between the clubs, because I was happy, genuinely happy for Leicester.
Who's the second best Derby manager of all time? Frank Lampard, yeah? All right, let's move on from there, shall we? Frank Lampard? Got to be, isn't it? Frank
Lampard. Yeah, he's up there. Jody Morris in. Let's get Jody Morris the job. What a bloke.
Right. I love having Frank at Chelsea. I can't tell you how brilliant it is. It's so brilliant to have a homegrown manager. I tell you, I love it. I love it. Right. I'm going to ask you just to make sure you've got, I don't think we need to see your qualifications because you've just said you do sports journalism. And I'm looking at the picture on your, we're doing this on Zoom. Yeah. That wherever you are, the room is just full of football shirts. So you're clearly a football fan. But I'm going to test your knowledge here. See how much you know about football. When was the last time people played with a leather ball.
Wow. Is it a trick question, or is it a genuine, the last time people played with a leather ball?
No, it's genuine, because you know, there used to be a time when people played with a leather ball. And obviously it's just synthetic now. By the way, I don't expect you to know the answer, and my answer could be dodgy as well. I seem to remember this being a fact, and I didn't bother Googling it before I started the podcast.
I wouldn't... 1963.
No, 1982.
Okay.
Well, I know it was the World Cup the last time we played with that. 1982, the leather ball, and it was the tango one. Spain? 82, so that was it. And then things changed from there. That was as soon as they got rid of the leather ball, Blake, that was it. It was all over.
9 years before I was born.
Football was over before you were born. Why are you called Blake? Is there a reason?
Yes, I'm named after Blake Carrington, who's someone I don't know who he is at all. Was he in Dynasty?
Really? Yeah, I don't know.
Blake Carrington. I'm going to Google it. Hang on 1 second. I'm named after someone called Blake Carrington.
Was he a character or an actor? Is that his character name or actor's name?
Blake Alexander Carrington is the male lead in the television series Dynasty.
Okay, so Blake is here to stop me saying, one of the reasons he's here is to stop me saying it was better off in my day, which is just lazy. And we've got to make sure I don't do that. And he has pointed that out a few times on our conversations on the phone, where he says, yeah, but in your day, it was just all football violence and horrible. And I'm like, well, yeah, fair point. it was quite dangerous going to football sometimes. It is the world sport, isn't it, football? And that's why it is so important. And when you want to walk away from it, you've got to realise that more teams enter the World Cup than there are in the United Nations. It really, apart, you know, it's bizarre. Even America love it now, but it's like, it's the one country where it's not the main focus, whereas the rest of the world just love football. And that's why it's got to be in the right hands. Blake, what do you think of football? Is it in a healthy situation at the moment?
It's a difficult question to answer, I think. I think there's certain aspects of the game that I don't like. And obviously, being a little bit younger, the game's changed almost unrecognisably in the last 4 or 5 years. VAR, 5 substitutes, the sheer amount of money in the game. And I know this is something I want to talk to you about on the podcast at some stage, because you've obviously witnessed the change at Chelsea from being second division club when you first watched them to go and winning Champions Leagues, winning Premier Leagues. And that's something that's going to happen to Derby. We've just been taken over by Sheikh Mansour's cousin, who's worth 118 billion. And to Derby County, that's just like... It's crazy. We're rooted bottom of the Championship. We've won one game this season. And as much as I would probably go down the pub and go, oh, football's a load of shit, all this money that's in football, as soon as someone comes and gives us a load of money, I think, oh, brilliant, yes. Derby County, we're going to be back in the Premier League. So it's a difficult question to answer. Like I said to you on the phone, I think people do look back at football with rose-tinted glasses and think, the 80s, oh, once it brilliant, terrible pitches. Oh, we went here and we could stand up on a terrace and we did this. But at the same time, it was horrible. The standard probably wasn't as what it is now. And I think you have to appreciate that we have got the best league in the world, the best players in the world. And if Derby County get anywhere near that with the money, and you're probably going to tell me differently, because I think that's one of the reasons you may have become disillusioned. But
yeah, I tell you what, when my friends who are City fans, I said to them, enjoy the journey up because it's fantastic. But when you get there, it kind of gets a bit weird. You sorry, United fans, but you turn into United fans where every week you just think you're going to win. But what is great is if you go to the games or you're watching your team on telly, which I mean, I don't care what anyone does, just enjoy football. That was always the way I looked at it, because, you know, it's a great game, but it's really nice to watch great players play, you know. When there was a rumour that Messi was coming over, to City, you know, do you remember that earlier on? Yeah. In the transfer window, it was like, oh, please let him come over and please let Ronaldo go back to United, even though they're not playing at Chelsea. You just love to see quality players playing. I mean, my favorite thing ever, my favorite Chelsea players, we could go into that someday, but I could not believe it when Ruud Gullit signed for Chelsea. I literally couldn't believe it because I was like, there's Ruud Gullit on the pitch in a Chelsea kit because he was a proper footballer, like, you know, one of the world's best, you know, a Dutch giant. And he was still playing in, he was still a great player. He was far too good for our team and far too good for the Premier League, actually, at the time. But yeah, so having the money's great. Just things change a bit. We'll get into that. But you know, I'm interested in the morals of the game at the moment. We've got to do an episode. It, you know, if we carry on doing this, we've got to do an episode on Qatar because I'm really struggling with that World Cup. Really am. And the fact that the football community and the world are just going, yeah, let's all go over there. I just, you know, there's so many arguments for and against boycotting events, but there's a lot there towards boycotting that one, I'll tell you, especially the way they got it in the first place. It's, you know, it's, I'm not sure about that one at all. And then, you know, I've got just a tiny bit of a problem with, you know, in the transfer, the last transfer market, Chelsea spending 300 million on player in the middle of a pandemic. I know why we're doing it. And I know Frank wants to go on and win the league, but it just feels a bit, we're in a pandemic, for God's sake. We just splashed 300 million quid on players.
Is it not the same as any other business, though? If look at it as Chelsea Football Club are doing this and they've invested 300 million that's probably going to make that. Do you not look at it the same as any other successful business that they've looked at and gone, we can put 300 million and we'll maybe do this and then we'll make more? Is it difficult for you to see it that way?
Yeah, because we own football. We don't anymore, by the way. But in my mind, it's still ours. And it's still our thing. And well, you know, I'm not naive. Of course it isn't. But you just, I don't know. I was talking to Matthew Syed the other day on my other podcast. And he was saying about how the big clubs there, they, you know, they want to play in this elite European league. They want to play against, you know, the American owners want to, see, we'll get him on the podcast to discuss it, actually. That'd be great. But they want to see Chelsea play Real Madrid or Barcelona. They're not interested in Chelsea Burnley. And they don't get it at all. Whereas for me, I like watching British teams play against, well, English teams play against each other.
So just quickly before we move on, when people like Ricky Hatton have said like that they support Man City and they'd much rather them be in Division 3 playing teams like Gillingham and stuff like that. Do you really believe they mean that?
I do think when City went down, there was something special. I really do. They were taking tens of thousands of fans away. And I think they really had, because football is more than just about winning. I mean, tell that to a load of the Chelsea fans these days. They weren't like that. But it was more about, you know, it's like being a Chelsea fan years ago. Here we go, rose tinted spectacles. So,
back in my day.
We just wanted a cup run. But, you know, I couldn't believe it when we won the FA Cup in 97 because I was like, oh, I literally can't believe it because we've actually won something like a proper football club. It was incredible. But, you know, I used to go up and down the country years ago watching them and it's more about just supporting something, being part of a story. And, you know, it was always United, Liverpool and Arsenal winning everything. And the rest of us just picked up the pieces. Now it's changed. And I suppose that's for a good thing. Right. Listen, I let's move this on a bit because otherwise we'll just talk constantly about the good old days when I used to go to Chelsea up and down the country. But look, I like to change my mind on my podcast. I've changed my mind on drug reform. I think drugs should be legalized. So listen back to that one if you're listening to this, because it's really important. I've changed my mind on schooling, how that works. I've changed my mind on a lot of things on health. So I will change my mind on football. So write in any thoughts you have on how the game is, the state of the game. Let us know. We've got an email, haven't we now, Blake?
Yes.
What is it?
Disillusionedpodcast@gmail.com.
Disillusionedpodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet me. We're actually going to do a poll, a live poll whilst we're speaking to you, and then whilst the podcast is on, we'll see what the results of it will be. Obviously, this is going to be pre-recorded, but I'll do a Twitter poll, and we'll see what people say. We'll do football these days, comma, is it choice one better? Choice two, worse, or choice three, don't care. There we go. How long should we do the Twitter poll for? Let's just do it for an hour, shall we?
Yeah.
Here we go. We'll do an hour's Twitter poll and see how we get on. Football these days, is it better, worse? Don't care. We'll let you know how that gets on at the end of the show. All right, so like I did say I've been tempted to walk away from football a couple of times. I've tried to, and I left Soccer AM, and I've done it for 11 years, and I loved it, and I still love football, and I sort of became just like a fan after I left, but it was kind of tough as well, because it'd been very intense for 11 years, you know, doing that, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But step forward another few years, and I got this like huge bout of depression, and I'd had depression before, but this one was really bad. And there was like, I'd started reading a bit of philosophy, and there was some Eastern philosophy which was saying that depression's a good thing, and I really bought into this, and I still do, by the way. And it's saying like, you get a bad arm, it means, you know, if you keep doing something on your arm and it gets bad, you stop doing it. And so the idea was that depression is the way that your mind and your body and everything is telling you that your life is not working, so change it. And I do believe there's so much depression out there at the moment. I believe it's the way we're running our lives, and especially online and with stuff like social media, I think it can really get you down. And so what the suggestion was is analyze every single part of your life, look at it, and then what you want to do is take a look at it and change something that you're not enjoying, or you know, just make mad changes, whether it be anyone, you know, like jobs, lifestyle, anything. And I started looking at football, and at the time it was like I was going to Stamford Bridge, and it wasn't quite as much fun. I've got three daughters, and you know, I wanted to be with them, really. The kickoff times are all over the place, and social media had just got so depressing. Like every time I talked about football, it was no longer people having fun and you could do a joke on there. It was just angry. And like, you know, for a fact, as soon as this podcast started, I'd be, oh, Lovejoy, you plastic fan, you rent boy, Lovejoy, you, what'll it be? Oh, you're not a real fan. You didn't support Chelsea. You only started supporting Chelsea when Roman Abramovich got all this stuff. And after a while, I started going, oh, do you know what? Just fuck off everyone. I'm just not interested. And even when I was watching it on TV, it wasn't sort of scratching the itch. And I was going, right, that's it. I'm giving it all up. I'm getting rid of football. I'm not enjoying it anymore. That's it. And then what I found though, is it like the conversations I've been having with you, it just keeps dragging me back. I can't escape it. So I'd be sitting watching the Chelsea game going, I don't really care. And then we'd score and I'd run around the room going, yes. And my ex-girlfriend would be going, I thought you'd given it up. And I'm like, well, kind of, apart from today, when I'm really enjoying the match. And I realized there'd be like Chelsea Spurs matches come on. I think, oh, I can't wait to watch that. And I'll be, what am I doing? I'm trying to give football up. And then, you know, all these sort of things. The other day, actually, I was watching us play Rent in Europe. And I let my little daughter stay up. And she's not really that interested in football, but she was watching it. And I don't know if she kept going, Rent equalized and it was 1-1. And she kept going, how much longer, Daddy? How much longer? I was going, 3 minutes, 2 minutes. Oh, it's the end of the game. And then Giroud scores in 91 minutes. And she ran around the room going, yes. And I thought, that is why we love football. That is it. I'm watching her. She doesn't care. But that moment, it just made her think about that. So I'd sort of tried to do it. And then it just keeps pulling me back. Let's talk about England, because a lot of my friends have just given up England and gone, absolutely no way. And then the World Cup came around and everybody got into that, didn't they? It was, I mean, did you get into the World Cup, Blake?
Yes. Yeah. The World Cup for me, football-wise, is probably up there as favourite football memories. If you said to me, favourite footballing memories, I reckon the 2018 World Cup would be two or three up there.
No, nobody ever missed England matches when I grew up, and now they are. What's your generation think about the England matches, or what do you think?
I think I'm the last of the generation where an England game, no matter who they were playing, was an event. So I can remember when I was first old enough to go to the local pub or go out with my mates, even if it was England playing Lithuania on a Tuesday night or Jamaica or a meaningless friendly, the pubs would be rammed and England playing... Yeah. Massive. No matter who, opposition irrelevant. If England were playing, it was an event. And we spoke last week, wasn't it? And I didn't even know England were playing.
Yeah. Well, do you know what's interesting about England was that, you know, I just mentioned the World Cup was great. The other day when I heard Jack Grealish was playing against Belgium number one rated team in the world. I was like, brilliant. I love Jack Grealish, the way he plays football. So I tuned in and he was brilliant. And we lost, but I didn't care because we were playing football that I wanted to watch. Then I heard he's playing against Iceland. I couldn't wait, playing alongside Mason Mount and stuff. I was just like, this is going to be great. And so I thoroughly enjoyed it. And that's what I mean. It keeps dragging you back in. And when I'd had depression before, what was interesting is football was always the antidote to it. I was always like, I feel bad, but at least we've got football. And then it became like, and I keep trying to analyze it. And look, if you're listening to this and you can help me, it's fine. And one of the reasons, obviously, I've got lots of friends at BT Sport and Sky Sports. I've worked at both and thoroughly enjoyed my time there. And I keep on saying to them, you've got nobody laughing or smiling. What's happened to the game? Where's the fun gone? Why aren't people enjoying it anymore? And I want to hear, you know, obviously Stelling does on a Saturday, and you know, you get the boys on BT Sport as well on their panel. They're all having a laugh. But generally, when you're watching round the game, it's so serious these days, and it's like, holy shit, let's talk about the Force 9 again or whatever. You know, it's like, why can't we just have some fun with it? And it just seemed to me that the fun had gone out of the game. And I don't know if that's 100% true, or again, it's me just looking back at the good old days.
Do you know, even in your time, obviously, was it 1995 or 6 you started on Soccer AM?
96, yeah.
Do you not think it's, at that point, it wasn't a viable career option for a footballer to go, all right, I'm going to be a pundit? There was only so many pundits. And now it seems to be that retirement is like, oh, I could go into coaching, or I can be a pundit. And there's that many pundits, and there's that many people having to give an opinion. They've got to have an opinion on everything.
Hey, if you're interested in the evolution of Soccer M, by the way, I did a great piece with a great podcast with Helen Chamberlain in two parts, where we discussed, I'll get her on here, actually. We'll get her here to have a chat. But where we discussed that, the initial, we used to be able to get loads of footballers on. And then towards the end, we couldn't get any footballers on the show. 11 years later, I literally, if you look at my last season on Soccer M, one of the reasons why I sort of went, I can't get out of this. You know, I work in a sport and I can't have any of the stars. Literally couldn't get any of them on. All the clubs went, no. And we ended up for a few seasons just sort of really, really getting Charlton and Leicester players on for a while because they were the clubs giving us them. And then we sort of, you know, it was just weird. We couldn't get any of the players. And football changed so dramatically. They became so, we couldn't get anywhere near them. So it changed. Not in a bad way, though, because social media was starting to happen and the guys needed to be protected from everybody. So, anyway, look. That is why, I keep walking back. It's been an amazing week, actually, this week, because Maradona has died. And that's not amazing. That's sad. But it's amazing because it was his 60th birthday the other day. And one of the things about Maradona that I thought was amazing was, if you watch all the clips which were doing the rounds, Maradona played in the era where there was contact. And if you don't want to hear me banging on about contact, this is not the podcast for you. because that's the one thing I miss. When Declan Rice the other day won that ball off De Bruyne, right? And the ref blew. I was like, no way is that. How is that a foul? And the pundits are going, intent, he should never race. No, the idea of football is to win the bloody ball. It doesn't, and I think I would be so crap playing football now because I just wanted to win the ball. That's what I wanted to do. And I'm watching that the other day and I was like, I'm tempted to turn the telly off because I'm really enjoying the game. How the hell is that a foul? You used to be able to win the ball. Now, when you look at those clips of Maradona, like, you cannot compare Messi, Ronaldo and Maradona. I'm sorry, you cannot do any comparison. It's a completely different game. I'm not saying Messi and Ronaldo are not as good as Maradona, because they clearly are amazing footballers, but you can't kick them in the throat anymore. Like, Maradona got kicked everywhere. It's like unbelievable the way he did. Did you see any of that footage?
Yeah, there's the famous clip of Maradona with his bootlaces undone. Is it Life is Life? And he's just like doing knee ups with his boots undone and kick ups. And it's like, that is class. And I watched Sky Sports News last night. And obviously, Maradona's a bit before my time. So I appreciate how good he was. But obviously, never having been around football at that time, he's like the last of, along with Pele, the last of like the mythical kind of footballers where I know he's amazing, but I can't really gauge how good he was.
Have you seen the documentary on him?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, just the guy single-handedly won Napoli the league, won Argentina the World Cup. I mean, the guy is absolutely incredible. You know, talking about Zidane, one of the things I forgot to mention is Zidane always scored important goals in finals. Maradona, the same. Pele, the same. These guys were just great. They won matches and they scored important goals, you know, so...
There was a brilliant quote last night, and it actually made me feel a little emotional as a football fan. And it was a Messi quote when he was asked a few years ago, well, someone compared him to Maradona, obviously with the links between the two. And he said, if I play football for 1 million years, I'll never be in the same league as Maradona.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Messi's pretty good. But the great thing I love about football, and I love about Messi, and I love about Maradona, is they're short. Most sports these days, the taller you are, just name a sport, cricket, tennis, golf, rugby, every other sport, size really helps you. The taller you are, to a certain extent, you know, it's important. All the tennis players these days are way over 6 foot. And yet football, because the ball's played on the floor, that is why you can have shorter, smaller guys. And the best players, you know, some of them have been absolutely minute because the ball can be played on the floor. That's why a lot of the managers years ago used to get the ball in the air to keep it away from the skillful players. And there was a match I went to. I think it was Marcel Desailly's debut at Coventry away. We all went because Desailly had signed for us. And I think it was either the first away match or his first match. And we all went there to see him play. And I think it was Dion Dublin was up front. So they just kept, Highfield Road, they just kept hurling the ball up. And I remember after the match, Desailly said something like, the ball was never on the floor. It was like, he'd come from Italy and then just couldn't believe that that ball was in the air constantly. It was just, it was a good way of playing against him. We lost, I believe, up there. Anyway, I digress. Yeah, so that's why. And actually, if there's any scouts out there or kids coaches, I wonder if you could help me, because I've my mates are telling me that because contact's gone out of the game, people who work in the game, a few people have told me that all they're doing with the kids now is putting a stopwatch on them to see how quick they are, because pace has become so important that if you're a slow player, even if you're the most skillful in the world, they're letting you go really quickly because there's no contact anymore. You need to be pacey. You need to have pace up the wings, pace up front, and all these players are just pacey players. And I think it's sad if football has gone that way. And again, that's why we need to bring contact back into the game.
Yeah, there's only one way to stop them, isn't there, if they're that quick. But I spoke to Joe Lollifer, who's the Nottingham Forest midfielder, this week, and I compared playing Championship teams with playing Premier League teams, and he said, Blake, the big difference is I go from being the quickest player in the Championship to just being a quick player in the Premier League. So they're that focused on pace. You say I'm the fittest player and the quickest player here, but the Premier League is that much based on pace. I just go just to being, oh, I'm just a bit quick.
Well, you could see it in the World Cup with Sterling, couldn't you? I mean, like, people criticising his play, but every time he got the ball, whatever team we're playing, they absolutely shit themselves because he's so rapid. So he can get behind them so quickly. There's a bloke down my gym, Blake, which is a great way of starting a story. There's a bloke down my gym who reckons his son was spotted at 4 years old because he was pacey out playing somewhere, and he was watching this kid run and went, he's quick, and he got spotted. That could be such bullshit, but I like it, so I'm going with it anyway. Look, we're going to have a guest on this show, so I wonder if it's worth us getting our guest on now. Should we give it a go? So, I tell you what, let's let him introduce himself.
Hi, I'm Robbie Knox. I'm a YouTuber, writer, director, producer, and now Twitch streamer, and I support Liverpool and Scotland. Oh, and I used to be on Soccer M for 10 years.
Robbie, hello.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm really good. You've got to quickly talk us through all those jobs. Well, not all of them, because it gets dull, but yeah. you're making your lunch, you're playing Football Manager, you're doing all these stuff for people to watch, yeah?
Yeah, I'm doing lots of, well, on Twitch, I'm playing Football Manager at the minute. I like to start off, I like to play the most miserable version of Football Manager possible, where I start off as me with no coaching qualifications, no football experience. So the first few years are just pure misery. I've joined Brecon and it's just begging the board to do coaching qualifications and just grinding out things like that. But yeah, doing that on Twitch is quite entertaining, enjoying it.
Yeah, and you're making your lunch on Bigo. Bigo?
Yeah, I finished doing that now. I was doing it for a brief period of time, yeah.
You're doing all right online, aren't you? You're like,
doing all right, yeah.
You know, because I remember when you were best mates with Fixtures Man on Soccer M. Do you ever see him anymore?
He was, do you know what? Last time I spoke to him, he's working at home base in Norwich, and I think he got furloughed, so I haven't spoken to him since then.
Do you look back on Soccer M with fond memories?
Yeah, it was brilliant, wasn't it? A great job to have in your 20s, I think. Like it was long. I mean, obviously, it was quite long hours and things like that, and it would fit in well with having kids you have to take place on Saturday. But yeah, that was a brilliant job.
Yeah, and it was just the perfect time, wasn't it? Because there was the Britpop going on and football had exploded, and it was just magical times. So it's very hard to not look back on that era with rose-tinted glasses, is it?
Yeah, and it was also before internet video really took off. So everything sort of, all the embarrassing things have mostly disappeared, apart from the odd dance-off thing, right? Where I had to be did soccer dog coats, so I had to crawl around pretending to be a dog with a dog coat on topless. And things like that. That's gone. It was a weird time because it was sort of that transition thing. Like at the beginning, when I first joined, I was writing, people would write letters into the show, actual physical letters, and I'd write letters back to them. And for some reason, I just personalised them all, just make one letter and send it. I was writing out individual letters to all these people.
Were you? I made you do that. I don't remember doing that. You doing that. I don't remember anyone.
You didn't make me do individual ones. I just thought it'd be nice.
Like it. Have you got any good a good Soccer M story for us whilst we got you on?
I don't know. I was thinking the other day about when the Bravery came on, an American band, and didn't like football. Because for a while, we just used to get football fans on, didn't we? And then we decided to just get on.
Yeah, well, I realised that if we were only going to get people who like football, it started limiting. And if we wanted to get Americans on and other people, you know, we could just start getting people on who didn't support anybody. Yeah.
And it was much better then. And they didn't support a team, so we got them to draw a team out of the hat.
That's right. We put all 92 clubs in a hat, didn't we?
Yeah. And they drew out Wolves, and they were really happy. And I think the club might have got them shirts, or we got them shirts or something like that. And they were really pleased. And they were on tour. And they were going, they were playing a gig in Birmingham, and they got really excited. So they came on stage in their Wolves shirts. And obviously, not everyone in Birmingham is Wolves fans, so they started just getting abused. So, what? I thought we were supporting the local team.
Yeah, because in America, you've only got half a dozen teams, haven't you?
And then, yeah, because Snoop does it when he goes somewhere, doesn't he? He gets a shirt wherever he is. Although you always see him in a Arsenal shirt or Norwich shirt, wherever he's been.
Yeah, exactly right. That's good. All right, so we've got you on. So you're gonna spend some time with us here, but we want to know what two questions we're going to ask you, because we're just feeling our way through the football industry at the moment. What do you miss about football from the olden days?
From the olden days, I think the thing, and it changed for me when they brought in, you know, the boards that tell you how many minutes are left in the game. Yeah. Of course, you know them. It's quite a big thing. When they brought those in, I think football changed from being the exact same game in a park on a Sunday league to the way the professionals play. And I think now with VAR and goal line technology and all that, it's gone further down that way. And I miss when it was just exactly the same. Like you, exactly the same equipment, exactly the same everything on parks as it was.
I didn't want to just start hammering stuff on here. That wasn't the idea, but I've just got to say, because it's the first one, VAR is just so bad. I mean, there's not one person in football who goes, I think it's doing a really good job. It's just such a mess. They should take it away, rethink it.
It's the only sport that's messed it up, because it works in cricket, it works in tennis, it works in rugby. It's just, they've not got it right. I don't know. And even then, it seems so far from where I was never for it anyway, but it was saying it's going to clear up, clear and obvious mistakes. And then now it's measuring out whether someone's sleeve was a millimetre offside before a goal, sort of thing like that. It's
things
weird.
Like that are just bullshit, and you're cheating the fans. I mean, that Eric Dyer handball, he wasn't even looking the same direction. Yeah. I mean, how on earth can that be everyone just gets angry when they talk about VAR. It was funny to begin with, and now it's just ludicrous. Blake, what do you think of it?
I think the reason it's not working in football is because laws are subjective, and this words like intent and things like that. So it works in tennis because the ball is either in or out. Whereas as soon as you go for a handball, if the ball's at his hand, it's handball. Whereas you can go, oh no, but he's got his arms by his side, or there's no intent to go for the ball. So as soon as you put something like that into it, I think there's too many variables for it to work. Referee to referee, it's so subjective.
I agree with that.
It does feel like so many things in football now have got away from what their purpose was. Like handball, the purpose was to stop people from handling the ball deliberately sort of thing. And now it's any sort of slight accidental sort of contact. Offside was there to stop people from deliberately hanging out and trying to do this. And now it's all about measuring someone's toe and stuff like that.
Yeah, but you've got to understand that the offside was there so it wasn't goal hanging. But then Arsenal and teams like Arsenal used to all line up and then just walk up with their hands in the air, Tony yeah. Adams and Bold and all that lot, to try and cheat that way. So whatever way you put the laws, they're there to sort of be interpreted. What frustrates me is when the pundits go along with it. So the one which really grates me is the he's got a right to go down. I mean, I could do a whole hour on that. No, he hasn't. He's got a right to stay on his feet and score a goal because we're paying good money to watch this shit. You know, it's like, stay on your feet. But now they've just accepted it. Oh, he's got to go down there. He's got a right to go down. You go back 20 years, he was called a cheat if he went down because it was supposed to be a man's game. Now the pundits say he's got a right to go down. Robbie, what do you love about the game now?
On that, just quickly, I remember when we had Stan Collymore on Soccer AM, and he was saying about how he didn't like players diving in deliberately. And then as a joke, you said to him, well, we actually found a clip of you diving. And he went, no, you didn't, because I never have. So it was really good. He goes, no, I never have, never would.
Had we found one?
No, we hadn't. No, you made it out. No, there weren't any. Good luck.
Well, good on Stan Collymore for that then.
Yeah. And what I love about football, for me, I grew up in Kent in the 1980s, so I support Liverpool. And I found out where Liverpool was and found out it was quite inconvenient. And even if it was down the road, as an adult, I'm never going to go to a game every week, essentially, during the football season. I've just got other stuff to do. Whereas international football, I've learned over the years, is the right level for me. No one expects you to go friendlies. No one expects you to go away. It's like three, four competitive games a year sort of thing. I can manage three or four games a year.
And I tell you what, this year being a Scotland fan is been amazing. That match, that game, how good was that?
Yeah. And what I found really sweet was a lot of like sort of England supporting friends were watching it. And then when they equalised in the last minute, I was going, oh my God, I can't believe it. Going, oh no, this happens every time. No. Like, it's lovely that you're surprised by this, but yeah, this always, literally always happens. Mm. It was the penalties that was unexpected. But yeah, so I think international football for me is still that sort of pure, it's not really, I mean, obviously there's slight advantage of money and training facilities and all that, but it's not, you can't buy players. It's, you sort of randomly get how these players come along. And everyone sort of gets together for games of that. It seems more pure and untainted.
Yeah. So seeing Scotland in a major tournament is going to be something else for you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a shame. Well, we'll see how things are with COVID by then, sort of thing. But yeah, it's very exciting. 22 years was the last time. France 98 was the last time. I was at uni then, so quite a while ago.
Perfect. Right. Listen, someone sent me a bit of trivia the other day. Well, a trivia question. I knew the answer to it. And you know, I know nothing about everything. So I was really chuffed with myself. They said, who invented 3 points for a win? And it kind of made me think about that. It was, of course, Jimmy Hill. And it made me think about it because I thought that was a real changing point in football because, you know, I've got Blake's definitely here to tell me it wasn't better in the good old days. And 2 points for a win, 1 point for a draw was definitely not better because so many teams just went for the draw away from home. It was horrible. So 3 points, that was a great thing by Jimmy Hill. He also invented the all-seater stadium. The first one at Coventry. He also invented, he wrote a song, I believe as well. And he also invented sponsorship on shirts. Do you remember they weren't allowed to have sponsorship on shirts, but he got the T of Talbot Cars and he incorporated it into the actual shirt the Coventry shirt to get it. Anyway, I set a question yesterday on Twitter saying, because we've now got all-seater stadiums, one of the biggest problems with all-seater stadiums is you arrive in your seat when you bought your ticket, and then you're stuck, if you're a season ticket holder, you're stuck next to the same bloke, woman, whoever, for the whole season, who could be an absolute nightmare. And it's always amused me because one of my friends got a season ticket at Chelsea, and he said he had to sit next to this guy who spent the whole 90 minutes every week just going, Chelsea. And he said it was like Chinese water torture. He said it just drove him mad. He had to change his season ticket the next season. So we asked on Twitter, and bizarrely, social media is a bit slower these days, but this wasn't. It went absolutely mad. Blake, you've got some, haven't you?
Yeah, there's quite a few. There's quite a few interesting ones. Interestingly, I sat for 12 years of my season ticket at Pride Park next to a bloke called Hasselum. And it was just an old man who used to go, Hasselum, Hasselum. there's a few interesting ones. One of them was a gentleman who supported Sheffield Wednesday who tweeted and put, I've sat next to the same person for 22 years. He doesn't know my name, so he just calls me Schmeichel. And he he gives him sweets every game. This is this is a bit of a throwback. Can you remember this? This used to be a thing when I first started watching football. The bloke next to me for at least 20 years used to bring to the match 20 small carrier bags of ripped up newspapers for those around him to throw when the team was walking out. Remember that when he used to throw?
Yeah.
Three goals. That's amazing.
Yeah, toilet rolls. They used to throw toilet rolls.
Yeah. Ticker tape and all that, hasn't it? Yeah.
Why do people throw toilet rolls? I mean, I suppose it just looked good.
Scotland did that a couple of years ago. They said, buy a season ticket and you can get the games cheaper. So I thought, okay, I'll buy it. So I bought it. It was a terrible decision because me and my friend Tony I'll go with had behind us a family of three generations of absolute idiots. You know, I'm always surprised by how often football fans who go to games like that have no understanding of what's happening. And I'm not saying I'm a tactical genius, but like it was just, you know, when a striker does the bit where he sort of stands offside and then he'll step back on and then go like that. They're shouting to whoever was up, I can't remember, was up front for Scotland at the time. They're shouting, you're offside again. You don't think he doesn't know? You don't think the best person at playing that position in the country doesn't understand the offside rule?
But people go to football for different reasons, and you know, that was always. There's a lot of people who go to football who just don't understand the game. I actually remember when Glenn Hoddle first came to Chelsea and we were playing out from the back and everyone was applauding. And then we got to like 80 minutes and we hadn't scored. And people started going, get it in the fucking mixer, get it in there. Get it. And all tactics went out the window. We wanted that there. Actually, a lot of these people are talking about... like this guy, he's called Andy, who says that I sit next to two lads who have never seen the first 20 minutes of a game, and that's even for a midweek clash. It's like they can't bear cagey first half football. They're in the pub, aren't they? That's what's happening.
Yeah.
And there's so many people who say people are turning up drunk. Here we go. This is the Sky Blue Hub. I had a guy in front of me who turned up drunk every home game and fell asleep during the game. It's just some people's outlet, isn't it? That's the thing. I wonder what they're doing during the pandemic and the idea that they can't go to their football and get absolutely hammered.
This family was leaving, always left early before every game. And it seemed just that campaign. It was the time when Scotland scored twice against England in the last, from free kicks in the last few minutes sort of thing. They would have missed they missed like about seven goals across like five games. But they also, I remember they had this one bit where I think it was left, like it might be Andy Robertson. He got the ball at the edge of our penalty area and ran like 80 yards with it, cut inside, beat two men, shot and just hit the side netting. And they just went, oh, for God's sake. I mean, what's this got 20 years? No one's ever done that. What are you talking about?
Jade says this one. My dad and I had season tickets for years when BCFC, is that Bristol City or Birmingham?
Birmingham, I don't know, yeah.
Which one has BCFC? Which one owns it? I wonder how they did that. Who got it first? BCFC. It must be... we were in the championship season. We were in the... Oh, so season we're in the Prem must be Birmingham. Sorry. Guy sitting in front of us and have been for years continues to accuse my dad of being a Man United fan because he commented on a corker of a goal they'd scored against us. Holding a grudge. I love it. I wonder if that when Twitter came out, they were like, who's going to get it first? BCFC. Yeah. Got any others, Blake?
Yeah, I like this one because there's two recurring themes. You've touched on one, which is the annoyance of people either getting there late or leaving early. And then the other one that I love is the nicknames. So you have these characters, but they've always got a nickname.
Nickname, yeah.
And Adam Williams put, I sat behind a guy at Upton Park who was known as the man with the pencil behind his ear. His catchphrase was, we never score from corners. And he was right.
The man with the pencil behind his ear. I bet, what would he do for a living? Baker. That's a painter or a carpenter, something like that. We're running a poll at the moment to see whether football is, whether people think it is better. The poll is, Robbie, football these days, is it better, worse, or don't care? What do you think? I'm not going to read out the results now. We'll do it at the end of the show. But what do you think the percentage will be? What do you think? We're gauging. What do you think people think?
I think people will say worse because people always think things are worse over time. I think it's different, isn't it? It's worse in some ways. You've got to remember as well how growing up, how little football there was on the TV and things like that. It was. I was thinking the other day, wasn't there a time in like the 80s or the 90s where there was a strike or there was a dispute or something and there just wasn't any football on TV for months? Do you remember that, Tim?
No.
I'm sure there was a time where there was some dispute or something and just for months and we go, well, no football then. Okay, fine.
You know what, right? I'm going to talk about this now then because I think this should be an education as well as just chatting nonsense. Chris England wrote this book. He's great, by the way, Chris England. We'll definitely get him on this. It's called On the Game, How Football Became What It Is Today. And he writes this, so I really recommend this book if you like football, because he just does the whole history of football and it's funny and it's a really lovely read. But he talks about when the Premier League happened. So I'll just read a bit from his book. The top clubs in England had threatened to break away several times before the Premier League was seriously mooted. In fact, it happened every time there was a television money negotiation as a way of blackmailing the Football League into handing them the share of an increasingly hungry lion to keep them on board. They threatened to break away in 1986 and then again in 1988 with the 10-team Super League, which was supposedly in the offing. But the breakaway that ultimately became the Premier League we know to this day was instigated by Greg Dyke, who was then the managing director of LWT. Dyke hosted a secret dinner for representatives of the Big Five. Who do you think were the Big Five back then? Come on. United?
Liverpool, Everton, maybe. United, Arsenal, Nottingham Forest, maybe.
Whoa.
Spurs. It was the Big Five, Spurs. United, Liverpool, Everton, Arsenal and Spurs, at which he asked them frankly whether they'd be interested in an even larger slice of television rights money. The club's chairman were way too canny to hand over complete control to another established organisation, however, and so the FA Premier League was formed as an entity that was commercially separate from both the FA and the Football League, able to negotiate its own sponsorship and television deals. When it came to it, Greg Dyke and LWT missed out entirely, despite having hosted the dinner that kicked the whole thing off. The bidding war was won by B Sky B, with the BBC winning rights to show highlights so that they could revive the Match of the Day programme. B Sky B were forking out an almost unbelievable £304 million, where the previous deal had been with ITV for, shall I tell you or do you want to have a guess?
4 million, something like that?
It was 44 million.
Okay.
The year before that was just 6 million. The deal these days is 5 billion over 3 years, isn't it? 1.5 billion a year or something, 1.57 billion a year, which is absolutely huge. It's amazing how it's gone. Right, so 91-92 season, the 22 First Division clubs all resigned from the Football League to found the FA Premier League. Those 22 clubs were as follows. Okay, Arsenal, Villa, Chelsea, Coventry, Palace, Everton, Leeds, Liverpool, Luton, Manchester City, Manchester United, Norwich, Forest, Notts County, Oldham Athletic, Oldham, Queen's Park Rangers, Sheffield United, Sheffield Wednesday, Southampton Spurs, West Ham and Wimbledon. That was the 22 clubs which started, and that was when it all changed. So unbelievable that it was only £6 million two seasons before the Premier League started. We're the richest league in the world, aren't we? The Premier League.
I think so. Yeah.
And then, do you know it's France is the second now? Did you know that?
No.
And then Germany, then Spain, and then Italy. Yeah. And then who's after Italy? Who do you think?
Oh,
you're never going to get it.
Yeah, we're well like MLS or something.
No, it's Turkey.
Oh.
Goes Turkey, Brazil, then England and Wales Football League, and then Portugal, Belgium, then United States of America. I'm really surprised USA haven't put more money into it, aren't you, to absolutely hammer it home?
Yeah, I'm not really paying much attention to what's going on there, to be honest. I know there's new teams coming along every now and then, but...
Okay. Right, Blake, have you got any news for us before we wind this podcast up?
Yeah, a couple of bits this week. One stat, while we're talking about stats that really... One, made me feel very old, and two, amazed me, was Erling Haaland for Borussia Dortmund at 20 years old. So just 20. He's now scored more Champions League goals at 20 than both Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo, R9, and Adriano. So at 20, he scored 17 Champions League goals. He's got more goals than Brazilian Ronaldo in the Champions League already.
Why?
Because he... Good of, well, I don't know.
Because they give him one every time he kicks it into the net.
I don't know, because he scored more. I don't know. But incredible. This is a stat.
No, but it's got to be a reason for it. Go on, tell us your stat.
In his professional career, he's had 90 shots and scored 71 goals.
That's mad.
He's good. That's why.
Because he's good.
Because he's good at football.
Robbie, what was the last year leather football was used in football?
Oh, I didn't really realize that it wasn't leather now, to be honest. So I don't know.
Well, we did this on Soccer M. I can't believe you can't remember all the 10 years of...
87? I don't know.
82. Well, yeah, I say 82. I know it was the last time that was used in a World Cup, but...
Okay.
There you go. And then it became synthetic. Go on, what was your other bit of news, Blake?
There's quite a bit going on, actually. Obviously, Gordon Taylor's retired from the PFA after 39 years, and obviously there's differing reasons that it's probably a podcast in itself of why he's left and what's happened, but a couple of massive things that he introduced into football, YTS contracts, so to improve the young game and football in the community, the football in the community scheme, which is now used by all 92 clubs. Every single Football League club has got a football in the community scheme, which is obviously helps the local youngsters and brings them through.
Do we like Gordon Taylor? I literally know nothing about Gordon Taylor apart from I think I'm supposed to not like him.
Yeah, he's just always been there. I remember Gordon Taylor from when I started watching football, been there. And I know more than about him now than I do when I was eight. Yeah.
No, but you're just supposed to... I think you're not supposed to like him, aren't you? Aren't you supposed to go, oh, he's one of the bad guys. He's not doing enough. Isn't he one of the ones who's not doing enough?
Isn't it because he also earns an awful lot of money? I think that's one of the reasons he's had a ridiculous salary. I think that's one reason football fans hate him. I think football fans just like hating people, don't they? So there's probably a lot of like quite small reasons.
Yeah, I think that's the reason. Right, have we come to the end of this podcast? Should we have a little look at where we're at with the poll? So, football these days, is it A, better, B, worse, or C, don't care? The percentages are 9% say it's better, 63% say it's worse, and 28% say don't care. So we're onto something here, though we're not trying to say it's worse at all. We're trying to say that it's just changed and
it's different.
It's different, yeah. And we're just trying to investigate whether what we like about it and what we don't like about it. We'd love for you to contact us if you could. The email address is disillusionpodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet me at Tim Lovejoy. How can people get hold of you, Robbie Knox, if they want to?
Oh gosh, I'm on Twitter at Robbie Knox. I'm on Instagram at Mega Robbie. Twitch is Robbie Knox TV. I know Robbie Knox FC, sorry. YouTube is just Robbie Knox. And my address is... No, sorry.
and if you want to get hold of Blake, if you're like a Leicester City fan, you want to have a little chat with him about rivalry, or you're a Forest fan and you want to discuss who owns Cluffy, what's your Twitter address, Blake?
I'm not on Twitter because I'm a bit too cool for Twitter now, but I'm on Instagram at Fallows25, FALLOWS25. Come on, Forest fans, let's have a debate.
Why are you not doing Twitter?
Just a bit. I'm just cool. I've only got Instagram now. I'm a bit too cool for the rest of it.
You said that a few times and neither of us are buying it. So you should be on it. Like, you know, it's a good way of getting communication going, I imagine.
I do have a podcast account, but going back to something you touched on at the start about mental health and things and social media and stuff, a few years ago I made a decision that I can't be on everything because I was just on my phone all the time. So I made a decision that Instagram was the one for me, and I can't really have everything because I'll be on my phone for 13 hours a day.
That's a good choice, Blake. All right, well, listen, thank you, Robbie, so much for joining us. And Blake, we'll do it again next week if we enjoy this one, shall we?
Yeah, go on then.
You've been listening to the Disillusioned Podcast. If you want to hear more or if you have anything to add, contact us at disillusionedpodcast@gmail.com, and hopefully you'll hear more from us soon. Up the Rams.